All That I Am by Anna Funder. Read by Judy Bennett and Saul Reichlin.
Ruth. When Hitler came to power, I was in the bath. Our apartment was on the Schiffbauerdamm near the river, right in the middle of Berlin. From its windows, we could see the dome of the Parliament building. The wireless in the living room was turned up loud, so Hans could hear it in the kitchen. But all that drifted down to me were waves of happy cheering like a football match. It was Monday afternoon. Hans was juicing limes and making sugar syrup with the dedicated attention of a chemist, trying not to burn it to garamel. He'd bought a special Latin American cocktail pestle that morning from the Cardeve department store. The shop girl had lips penciled into a purple bow. I'd laughed at us, embarrassed at buying such frippery. This wooden shaft with its rounded head that probably cost what the girl earned in a day. "It's crazy," I said, "to have an implement solely for mojitos." Hans put his arm around my shoulders and kissed me on the forehead. "It's not crazy." He winked at the girl, who was folding the thing carefully into gold tissue, listening close. "It's called civilization." For an instant I saw him through her eyes. A magnificent man with hair slicked back off his forehead, Prussian blue eyes and the straightest of straight noses. A man who had probably fought in the trenches for his country and who deserved now any small luxuries life might offer. The girl was breathing through her mouth. Such a man could make your life beautiful in every detail, right down to a Latin American lime pestle. We'd gone to bed that afternoon and were getting up for the night when the broadcast began. Between the cheers, I could hear Hans pounding the lime skins, a rhythm like the beat of his blood. My body floated, loose from spent pleasure. He appeared at the bathroom door, a lock of hair in his face and his hands wet by his sides. "Hindenburg's done it. They've got a coalition together and sworn him in over the lot of them. Hitler's Chancellor!" He dashed back down the corridor to hear more.
Toller. Two quick knocks at the door. Clara and I maintain formalities, because formalities are required between a man and a woman who work alone in a hotel room, as between a doctor and a patient in the most personal procedure. Our formalities transform this place of rumpled dreams, the sod-green curtains, the breakfast tray uncleared, the bed I hastily made, into a place of work. "Good morning." An open smile on her red-painted lips, lips that look suddenly intimate. It is the smile of a young woman whose flame is undiminished by racial exile, who has possibly been loved this morning. "Good morning, Clara." Today she wears an apricot faux silk shirt with lavish sleeves and three-button cuffs, a cheap copy of luxury that lasts but a season and may just be the essence of democracy. Peachy, as they'd say here in America, although in English I can't tell poetry from a pun. She brings with her morning air, new minted for this day, the 16th of May, 1939.